Don't be afraid of change and understand that it may be uncomfortable, but you'll get through it.
This is episode 291 on the Hidden Why podcast with Joan Sotkin.
You're listening to The Hidden Why with your host, Lee.
G'day gang, welcome to the Hidden Why podcast. My name is Lee Martin, the Hidden Why guy, and I help and assist and inspire people to discover their why so they can really live life with greater passion and purpose. And what it's all about is really taking your own journey and just enjoying that journey. So that's what I help people do, guys. Every week, I bring two interviews, two inspiring guests that can teach us something that will help us in our lives. I'm curious and I want to learn, so it's very much a curious sort of conversation style. I think you'll enjoy today's chat with Joan Sotkin. She is the founder of Prosperity Place, and for the last 25 years, she's been helping entrepreneurs and practitioners use their inner resources and practical techniques to experience freedom from personal, professional, and financial struggles. She has helped thousands, and her groundbreaking book is called Build Your Money Muscles, 9 Simple Exercises for Improving Your Relationships with Money. She is a great mindset master, in my opinion. She knows a lot about emotions. And certainly, guys, this chat today isn't about money. It's really about emotions, our inner workings, and why that's blocking us from really progressing in the areas of life that we desire to progress. And that might be money. It might be other areas as well. Love, relationships, you know, you name it. Perhaps even your health. There's something that might be stopping us from doing that. So it really takes the ability to create some awareness and look within and do the work to draw it out and express it. So we talk a lot about that. We do talk about some external sort of practical tips and bits of advice that you can work on as well to help better improve, you know, your finances and your financial freedom and your ability to attract more finances into your life. It's a really great chat. It's very much, well, it's not very much. I guess it's more spiritual than, you know, all about money. So don't be turned away if you think it's just about money. Joan's an amazing person. She had a great experience in earlier on in life where she just had, you know, this terrible health. She described it as sort of depression. And the doctor said she, you know, wasn't going to be able to survive if she kept going this way. So she made some pretty significant changes. At one point in her life, she gave away everything she owned to just go on a journey and an adventure. And I think that was really special. We didn't go into too much depth into that story, but I did touch on it because I was curious. So you'll hear that towards the end of the show as well. Lots of gold in this one, guys. Enjoy it. Share it with your network if you love it. Facebook, Twitter, etc. Share it out there. If you're interested in catching up with Joan, seeing what she's working on, you can visit her at prosperityplace.com. Her name is Joan Sotkin. I'm pretty sure you'll enjoy this interview, guys. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll chat at the other end.
This is The Hidden Why, discussing ideas and thoughts on living life with passion and finding your hidden why, your reason, your purpose.
G'day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to The Hidden Why podcast. Here we are. I've got Joan Sotkin on the line with me. How are you, Joan?
Terrific. How are you today?
I'm fantastic, and I'm ready. I'm excited. I'm ready to pick everything you know about prosperity, finances, and your story as well, because it sounds quite interesting.
Okay.
So, Joan, I've filled in the audience with a bit of a background of what you do currently, but tell us, what do you do in your words?
Well, I'm an internet marketer, and I've been doing business online for 21 years.
Wow.
Which is longer than some of the people online have been alive. So I've had to change with the times. And I'm very interested in creating multiple streams of income. So I do a bunch of different things, and I do coaching. I have books on Kindle. I have online programs, and I have an Etsy store. And I just like to find different ways of making money.
That's quite important as far as, you know, creating that financial freedom that we desire, as far as I know anyway. Just firstly on that, I mean, it sounds like you're quite busy and you do a lot of things. How do you find time, or how do you create the effectiveness in your life so you can do all that?
Well, I don't rush. I do whatever I can, and I don't worry about what doesn't get done. And I work from about 7 o'clock in the morning till 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I don't turn my computer on Sundays when I turn the computer off at 4 o'clock. that's the end of the day. And I just fill my days with some things I enjoy. And I don't see that I don't have enough time. In other words, whatever I get done is what I get done.
Okay. So you put your head down and you do the work, which is probably the biggest key to being effective. Is there any particular practices that you have to, you know, keep your focus on what you're doing? Because I like that attitude. Sorry, I interrupted.
Yeah. I interrupted. So, well, I've been meditating since 1972. Mm-hmm. And I think that makes a very big difference. And also, I'm really healthy. I used to be very sick. And when I was 30 years old, the doctors told me I could never be healthy. I should just get used to all of my problems. And I said to myself, that's not my story. And so I started reading. There wasn't a whole lot of information back then, which was 1973. But I figured it out partly through the meditation where I just get ideas in my head. So I haven't had sugar in 42 years. I don't eat any processed foods. And, you know, so I eat well, I sleep well, I don't worry, I meditate. So I'm doing all the things that people are trying to do. And I got to tell you, it works.
Yeah, absolutely. I wish, I mean, it's progress, I guess. And I feel the same way. I mean, I meditate, I try and eat as healthy as I can. But there's still a lot of work to be done. And it's partly because I've, you know, done things wrong for 15 years, and now I have to do the work to clear those blockages.
Right, and 15 years is not that long. I mean, I was 30 when I started changing, and I was already really sick and had emotional problems. I was a suicidal depressive for 15 years.
What caused that? Can I just delve into that story? Like, was it drugs or alcohol, or was it just unhealthy sort of diet? What was it?
Well, 2 days after I gave up sugar, I wasn't depressed anymore. Mm. This doctor who saved my life said, if you stop eating sugar, you're not going to be depressed anymore. So I did. And he had never seen anyone actually do it. It takes usually people more than 2 days to decide to give up sugar. But I didn't want to be depressed anymore. And so I just did it. It took me a while to get over being a depressed personality. Because I got a lot of attention from being sick. And so there were a lot of issues I had to deal with. And for a long time, if I ate any sugar, anything, I mean, little tiny amounts or any kind of carbohydrates like pasta or anything like that, I'd become suicidal within 24 hours.
Wow. So it was a depression sickness. You're talking on. Okay, was that brought about? I don't know if we can go there, but was that brought about by anything in particular? Or was it just an accumulation of the lifestyle that you sort of fell into?
Well, actually, there were a lot of issues. I was brought up in a typical dysfunctional family, and I just wound up with the depression that was exacerbated by my diet.
Okay. Yep. So, and I think that's really important, you know, because some of the audience listening might be in that spot now where they've just got this awareness about, you know, a different kind of life that they want and desire, but they may be struggling to get out of that. And I really agree with you that health is critical, you know, and it's not easy to make changes that rapidly, but you just need to start making some changes and you'll notice the effects, you'll notice how it feels, and that feeling will start overpowering the old feelings, and you'll want more of it, and you'll be driven to just keep on improving your health. And that's certainly the experience that I've been through and I'm still going through.
It's a lifetime thing, and you have to make the decision. Once you make the decision that you're going to be healthy, then you have to ask yourself with each thing you decide to do, is this keeping me on my path? Hmm. Now, I feel that my body mind is an investment. So I eat only organic. I take a lot of supplements because I had a genomic test once where they test your gene variations. And the person who did the testing said, if I wasn't living the way I have been living, I'd be dead by now because I had so many genetic variations. And so I'm willing to spend a couple of $100 a month on supplements and to do what has to be done, because I know if I don't take care of my vehicle, it's going to wind up with a lot of pings, and I don't want those symptoms.
Yeah, okay. Well, I guess it's the how that I want to ask is how did you decide to, you know, really start making the change? Because I know from experience, I know the audience could probably relate, is that you're aware and you feel that you want to do something different, but it's sometimes just so hard to take that first step. And you said there, you know, you need to really make that decision so you can make more purposeful decisions as to the path that you're taking. And that's why I believe we have to do the work around what our why is, so we can really connect with who we are and what we want to do, and that will allow us to take more purposeful action. But how did you go about making that decision and then taking that action? Was there anything in particular that stands out?
I wish I could give you an easy answer, because if I had that answer,
everyone would be brilliant.
$1 million idea. Yeah. I mean, when the doctor said to me, you're going to be sick the rest of your life, that wasn't a big decision for me to say that's not my story. And nowadays, it's so easy to make these decisions because all this information. Remember, when I made the decision, there was no internet. There was one health food store in Los Angeles. There were just a couple of books that I could read. I mean, now there's so much information all over the place. And I really believe that once you set your intention and you're serious about it, that you'll find the answers that you need. However, if you don't deal with the emotions that are informing your decisions, then that's going to affect your ability to make the decisions.
Aha, well, there we go. So we've got to deal with those blockages, those emotions. Any tips or advice you'd give around dealing with those and how to sort of draw them out and expose them and, I guess, expose them for the fraud that they are?
Well, you know, people have this relationship with emotions that's very interesting. Emotions are very much a part of who we are. Mm. It's part of our expression. And it's part of our individual expression because no people have the same combination of emotions. And we're taught from early on not to express our emotions, yet they're very important to us. And we haven't been taught how to express them. I can say to you, express your emotions. And if you've never done it, you haven't got an idea what I'm talking about. You can't even define your emotions. So the work that I do is very much around helping people embrace rather than push away their emotions. Because when you're eating a lot of sugar and drinking a lot of alcohol or spending a lot of money, those kind of compulsive behaviors are very often to cover up emotions that you developed early in childhood. Yeah. I mean, you asked me about the backstory, and I came from a family where boys had much more value than girls, and my father was a bit of a bully, and so there was a bit of emotional abuse. And I don't know if it was more than most families, but it certainly affected me. And it gave me this sense of less than. And in the family, also, we weren't allowed to express feelings. We didn't touch each other very much. So this feeling of aloneness and separation was very strong in me. And I couldn't have told you that that's what I was feeling because I had no idea how to define or express my emotions. Mm. And so when I first went to, I think I went to Overeaters Anonymous first. And they talked about the connection between overeating, which I was doing, and emotions. It was sort of like confusing to me because I didn't quite understand it. When I got the Debtors Anonymous, they said the same thing, that there was a connection between money and emotions. When I got to Codependence Anonymous, where they talk about emotions, and I would say something about how I was feeling in whatever clumsy way I was describing it, they would clap at the end of my sharing. And it was like, oh, wow, I can get acknowledged for feeling. What a concept. So I just did everything I could to figure out what emotions were about and how to let myself feel it. And I used to have a lot of physical pain. And, you know, there's a branch of medicine called psychoneuroimmunology, which is the connection between emotions and health and how unexpressed emotions can affect your health. So what I figured out to do is when I had something that was really hurting me, I would put my hand over the area that was hurting and I would make these awful sounds. I would make the sound of the feeling. So I'd make the sound of the pain and the pain would diminish. It was amazing. And that was one of my first forays into learning how to express what I was feeling, because feelings are just kinesthetic experiences in your body. People think their feelings are in their head. They're not. The physiology of feelings is you have these little things called neuropeptides, which are biological elements, and they attach themselves to receptors in your cells. And that's how you have an emotion. But because by their nature, emotions need to be expressed, if you don't express that emotion, the energy just builds up in your body and something's going to happen, like you're going to fall and hurt yourself, you're going to have an accident, you're going to get a cold, the flu, whatever it is. Those emotions have to express themselves, and they will express themselves through your physical body if you don't know how to express them normally.
Okay, that's really interesting. And I think it's quite important to talk about this, because, I mean, in relation to your finances, but in relation to everything, really, is you know, about expressing those emotions and letting them out so they don't build up and create, I guess, more of the blockage for what you want to experience in this life. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And here's the way I look at it. You have beliefs that lead to thoughts, that lead to emotions, and those emotions inform your decisions, which affect your behavior. And your behavior is what determines the outcome of your life stories, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So the emotions are actually the creative force behind your life stories. And, you know, people say, well, you got to look at your beliefs. Well, I think it's pretty hard to pick out your beliefs. Right at this moment, you and I each have hundreds of beliefs that are at play while we're talking to each other about who we are and where we live. And so how do you figure that out? So I think it's and your thoughts, if you just change your thoughts, things will start changing, but you've got to get to those emotions. And the thing is, here's the tough part. I mean, it sounds pretty simple, but it's not, because the emotions that are affecting your decisions were developed early in childhood, sometimes in utero. And getting to those, they're so much a part of who you perceive yourself to be that it's not as easy to recognize what those emotions are. And I can give you some examples if you want.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's say you come from a family where your mother wasn't very good at bonding. You were bottle fed, and she didn't know how to look in your eyes when she was feeding you, and she didn't touch you very much. So there wasn't much bonding either with your mother or your father or both. And a lot of people, certainly in certain cultures, have that problem. So children long for touch. Touch and connection are basic human needs. So when you're not getting the touch that you need, and babies need to be touched, then this feeling develops, which you can't identify when you're in the crib. This feeling develops of longing for touch. Can you see that?
Yeah.
Okay. So what I've come to see is that when people aren't earning what they want, the feeling behind that is often and usually longing. That's a feeling that developed early in childhood and is so much a part of you, you don't even know it's there. It's even at play with over-earning. I mean, do you really need another $1 billion? That always longing for more, the longing. And when you can recognize that longing feeling and find a way of satisfying yourself, then your stories are going to change. I realized at one point that I wasn't feeling touched. I asked myself, are you no longer being touched? I mean, when I was a kid, my father used to say when she was 6 months old, she drooled on me and I never touched her again. So, and it was pretty true. And my mother came from a family where no one touched each other. So I asked myself, is it true that I'm not being touched today? And this was when I was feeling kind of, I wasn't getting to where I wanted to be financially. And I looked around and I said, I've got 10,000 people on my mailing list. That's 10,000 people who have touched me at some point. And I said, well, how do people touch each other? How do adults touch each other? By smiling at each other, by listening, by handing someone money. That's an act of touch. When someone pays you for something you've done, that's a way of saying, I appreciate you, I acknowledge you, and I like you. And so that's why people crave money, because it's a way of being touched. So I started looking around, and like, I have this guy I'm really friendly with. I've known him for 20 years, but he's not at all affectionate. And I said, well, how does he touch me? And every time he says hello to me, there's a big smile on his face. And I realized that, you know, people hug me, they shake my hand. And I realized I was being touched, but I didn't feel touched. So I had to teach myself how to feel touched. And I'd get into bed at night and think of all the ways that people had touched me during the day. And I would just allow myself to feel touched. I've craved touched. So once I started imagining what it feels like when I touch myself and just stroke my skin. So I became aware of this. So every time someone would hug me or shake my hand or smile at me, I would allow myself to feel touched.
Yeah, and it's interesting to think about, and I guess the people are, you know, myself reflecting on it right now and how it relates to our situation, our emotions, and how that might be affecting our sort of behaviors or direction in life and what we're sort of maybe concerned about. And I think the point with emotions is everyone's so different that, you know, it really helps to get someone that is sort of a bit aware about, you know, emotions that can help you sort of draw them out and get better understanding, because you've just given one example, which does help. But yeah, emotions are so complex and vast, it's important to have that support, right?
Absolutely. And once you allow yourself to develop your emotional intelligence, and you realize that when you allow yourself to feel your feelings, and you don't have to give them names, you just have to become aware of the kinesthetic experience within your body. Once you allow yourself to feel them, even though they might be uncomfortable, they are going to pass. It's not forever. Yeah. I remember when I was dealing with shame, I drew this cartoon at one point where I felt like I was a tube of toothpaste and I could just see the streams of shame just coming out of me as I squeezed that tube. And I would get to the point where it was so uncomfortable, I thought I was going to die, and then suddenly it would just go away.
Yep, allowing you to move on.
Yes, and so in the work that I do, actually, when I work with people one-to-one, when I can recognize what they're feeling before they can, that often creates a release. I just talked to someone today, and he called me because he's been doing some trading, some financial trading, and not doing very well at it for a long time. And he really wants to do it and can't understand why he's not doing it well. Well, it turns out that when he was in his 20s, he really wanted to be a psychologist. He's in his 60s now. And his father didn't want him to do that. And whatever he did, his father was a corporate executive. And this guy wound up as a tree trimmer and a manager, but he wasn't doing what his father wanted him to do. And he realized that he really wants to do this trading, but the fact that his father wouldn't want him to do it was affecting his outcomes. Mm. And he's been trying to figure it out for a long time. He's been, you know, trying a lot of energy psychology techniques and this and that, but he never saw that connection. Because what happens, it's so much a part of us, as I said before, that it's hard to see by yourself what's really there. So people will try things like EFT and Be Set Free Fast, but in order to treat yourself, you have to be willing almost to step out of your identity.
Mm. And I think that's the challenge, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. And I mean, I work with some pretty powerful people, and it's hard for them to let go because they've built up all of these methods of protecting themselves. Almost everybody I meet has a wounded child inside of them from something that happened as a child, and we don't talk about it. And so we develop these protective devices. Mine was being somewhat sophisticated so people wouldn't want to touch me.
Yep.
Okay.
So putting up barriers, yeah.
Putting up the barriers.
Yep.
Yeah. And what happens as I started making these changes, people started responding to me differently. And I wasn't sure how to deal with that. You get what I call the moving stupids. It's like when you moved from one country to another, and or if you move from one house to another, you get really stupid because you don't know where anything is. You're not sure what to do. And it's a state of disorientation that people don't like. So they go back to doing what they used to do.
We don't like that change piece. It becomes,
I get
that. That's cool. What is it about all this then that, and I know we've sort of touched on it, but I want to get a bit more specific. You've got a book called Build Your Money Muscles and 9 Simple Exercises for Improving Your Relationship with Money. And I think that's really important. And I feel, you know, my relationship with money is probably improving and probably has improved, but maybe it's still not great. And certainly, you know, I'll talk my partner, I feel, has this sort of relationship with money. And I feel it's based on our upbringing and how we've seen our parents, you know, act and behave around money and what it's all meant. And perhaps that's, you know, conditioned us to the way we are. And I know the audience can relate. And I know there's a lot of people out there that just struggle with money. How can we tap into our emotions to figure out what the problem is from stopping us really, you know, reaching that full financial freedom or earning capacity?
Okay, it's pretty simple. Once you understand that it's never about money.
Yeah.
If you're worried about losing money, you're worried about being alone. Your relationship with money is a reflection of your relationship with yourself and the world around you. And it's never about money. Money is a very neutral kind of thing. It's just pieces of paper or numbers on a spreadsheet, or they're just numbers. Mm. And yet when people look at their bank account, they have all these feelings. They feel, oh, I should be making more money. People my age should be making more money than this. And that's shame. That has nothing to do with the money. That has to do about how you feel about yourself. So once you say to yourself, it's never about money, and you say to yourself, well, if it's not about money, what is it about? And it's usually about something you're feeling as a result of something that happened when you were a kid.
Wow. And if can we just touch on that? And I'm going to throw myself in the ring here because and it's interesting. And I've been really pleasantly cool with money over the past few years, and I've become more relaxed where I just go, you know, it's just money, whatever. And that's allowed me to really just enjoy life and focus on the work that I do. And there's a lot of great things. But anyway, I had a thought. I woke up in the middle of the night last night because my child woke up, etc. But then I jumped back in bed and I was just thinking, and it was a conversation that I had with a friend, and he said, oh, I've got some extra money there, so we're going to spend it on the house to fix it up, etc., etc. And I've just made this move, Joan, from Australia. We sold 2 of our properties. We've still got 1 property left. But we sold 2, and and sort of taking a different path in life. And I was just reflecting on it in bed. I was going, oh, but maybe is that really the right thing? And, you know, what does that mean? Like, you know, if he's fixing up his house, we don't even have a house to fix up. I mean, well, how's that going to affect us in the future? And I had these sort of worries that came up, and it was really quite interesting. I'm happy to reflect on it with you. So can we draw that apart, Joan, like with your experience and see what that might mean, just so to give the audience some greater context?
Okay. Well, first of all, you have this part of your brain called the amygdala.
Oh, yeah, I know
and,
that.
And the job of the amygdala is to keep you safe.
Yeah.
And the thing that the amygdala hates more than anything else is uncertainty.
Yeah.
So every time you're in a situation where the outcome is uncertain, your amygdala is going, danger, danger. And really, you have to bring your focus back to the moment and just say, is everything okay today?
Yeah.
Because whatever story you're making up about the future is just the story.
Yeah.
That is nothing. What I learned how to do if I started worrying about money, because it's a natural thing to do. I mean, we're taught to worry about money. And I would say to myself, a large sum of money from an unexpected source. Because that was as true as anything I was making up. So you just have to intercept the thing that's going on in your brain. And the fact is, this is all based on brain science.
Yeah.
You have neural pathways in your brain that define that your habits are defined by. In other words, when you do something over and over again, eventually it becomes automatic.
Hmm.
And the only way that you can change that is to create an alternative behavior that you do over and over again until it becomes automatic.
Hmm.
So if you're very aware of and you're working very hard to develop more awareness of what's going on inside of you. So the very fact that you could describe what you went through last night, you were describing a habitual pattern. And so you can say to yourself, okay, what do I want to do instead? When I start worrying about money, which is irrational at the moment, what would I rather do instead? So my answer was just say to myself, a large sum of money from an unexpected source. Because the idea is to get yourself out of the future and into the moment. That's the value of meditation.
Yeah.
The more you meditate, the more you're able to get yourself into the moment. Is everything okay today? You know, when you're in business for yourself, it's not a steady ride. You know, and there's no paycheck at the end of the week or at the end of the month. And it's an uncertain life. And I think that one of the greatest skills that entrepreneurs have to develop is dealing with uncertainty because you're never going to have certainty no matter what your position.
Yeah.
Okay. So you were looking at it and you said to yourself, it wasn't about money. You said, what's going on here?
Mm.
Right.
Mm.
Okay. And so that was an easy one because you're dealing with a lot of uncertainty and there may be things, am I good enough to handle this? And if you were comparing yourself to anyone else, those are just habits.
Yeah, yeah.
They're just habits. Comparing yourself to other people is a habit. Taking things personally is a habit. Whatever you do over and over again is a habit. I was talking to someone the other day who has a dissatisfaction habit. Now, She put together this business on Amazon where she's making millions of dollars a year. And so she's got more money than she needs. But she felt she wasn't getting enough acknowledgement from a certain group of people.
Yeah.
And so I was in that group and someone stood up the other day and just said how wonderful they thought she was.
Mm.
And so when I saw her later, I said, was that enough? She said, it didn't come soon enough. I mean, once you've got a dissatisfaction habit, nothing's going to satisfy you.
Yeah, and it's interesting. We don't often think about, you know, the habits of the mind or the thought, but it's so true. They do become habits. And certainly I was one that, you know, for a while was just always comparing myself. And as I just stopped myself every time I did that and started to change that habit. I don't do it anymore or as often anyway. I think it's sometimes hard not to, but yeah, it's certainly helped, and I've created that habit now where I just like, yep, just do my work, just do what I want to do and stop comparing.
Right. So you knew automatically how to create new neural pathways in your brain. And that's, it's just, it's science. You know, we live in this machine called the body, and it lives by certain scientific principles. It's like one of the things that really gets under my skin these days is how much they talk about curing disease, and they never talk about preventing it, which the machine needs certain fuel and certain maintenance. And if you take care of the machine, it stays healthy. Yeah. And the same thing is true of your mind. And there, you know, it's like you're really good at figuring this out for yourself. Most people are not. And what, like, one of the things I tell people, you know, sometimes you'll have these things go around and around in your mind, like shoulds and oughts and, you know, and there's just stuff that goes around and around and repeats itself over and over again. Well, if you start saying those things out loud, it gets it out of your head. I mean, that's really simple, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's, I mean, you know, I think everyone has the ability to figure this out and become more aware, but they just need to create that space so they can allow that awareness and allow that learning and attention to come into play. Otherwise, they will just allow these mind habits to consume their life and sort of block them from reaching that potential that they want.
Right. But in my book, Build Your Money Muscles, yep. I talk about the identity factor.
Yep.
The identity factor kicks in anytime you start making dramatic change, because the way you are today, right this minute, you know how to anticipate responses from the people around you. It's like my friend who didn't want to be satisfied. She knows how to be dissatisfied really well. She has no idea what her life will be like if she's satisfied. And so the amygdala kicks in and says, danger, danger. It's best for you to be satisfied. So she has to be willing to see that it's just a habit and that it's going to be a little disorienting as she changes the habit, but it can be done if you give it enough time.
Yeah.
And that's true of everything. If I see people who are so habitually sad and they need to tell you all their problems so they can get your sympathy. And if you were to give a tone to their emotions, it's very minor key, and you don't always want to be around them because you never know what they're going to be complaining about. and they can make the decision to change that.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, it's just important, a reminder to, you know, just understand that it takes time, it takes progress. And we tapped on it at the start of the show where, you know, for me and for you, you know, when you were 30, it's an accumulation of so many years to that point that, you know, has made you who you are. And to change that, it's not going to happen in 3 months. And I think people forget that. Like if you've got a weight problem, how long has it been to get you to that weight problem? And if you start a New Year's resolution to lose the weight and in a month you don't see any difference, you're likely to give up. But you have to understand that it just takes time. These things take time. Like I've been into personal development for the last several years and still things I need to change are happening and progress is happening. But I'm not going to give up. And that's the thing. You've just got to keep progressing, keep pushing forward, keep learning, keep doing the work. And you'll find that things will change. Things will grow and you will progress.
I've been doing this work for 40 years, and I'm still doing it. I don't know that it ever ends, because once you reach a point of comfort, and I can honestly say I have done that, it's like, okay, what's next? And in order to get to that, that's what next, you have to go through another layer of yourself. And it's really, I think this is interesting. I had reached the point where I'm comfortable. I don't have a whole lot put aside because I was sick for so many years. And I wanted to change that. And I just, I just didn't have the energy. I wasn't feeling like doing stuff during that day. So I had this blood test. I usually get one every year because I have to watch certain things. And the doctor said to me, your thyroid's a little low. I don't do drugs of any kind.
Yeah.
So I got this supplement, a thyroid support supplement. You're supposed to take 3 a day. I take 1 a day. And my energy levels are amazing. Now I'm going to be 76 years old at the end of the year, right? And I have more energy than most people half my age. First of all, because the way I eat and live, but this little bit of kick from the thyroid got me doing, because my goal was to create multiple streams of income. I mean, today it was like, oh my God, I created this and all this money's coming in. I gotta deal with it. People forget that when you do get the money you wish for, that you actually have to deal with it. It doesn't just fly in the window and take care of itself. And so I find myself having to put together new systems. But that little kick I got from the thyroid supplement is giving me the energy I need to do whatever I want. And I'm able to walk 2 miles a day now. And I mean, you have to do all these things and each year of your life, no matter what age you are now, there are going to be new things that you can improve. And each time you have to make the decision to improve it.
I really like that. And again, it sort of touches on the importance of your health in relation to, you know, what you want to achieve in life, and a good reminder for all of us. What I just wanted to ask you, because you deal with a lot of entrepreneurs, yeah, Jane?
Yes.
And
yes.
In your experience dealing with entrepreneurs, people that are going out there, starting their business, whatever it might be, online, offline, what is the thing that's stopping them from just making the breakthrough? Because I feel that a lot of entrepreneurs out there go out there and it's just trying to make that first dollar that can support that lifestyle, that new lifestyle that they want. And it's very difficult. And a lot of people, when they don't get there after, you know, whatever period of time, it might be a year, a couple of years, or just even a few months, they just go, oh, screw this, it's too hard, and give up. What is the biggest thing? Is it the emotional sort of attachments that we have that is stopping that first earning to help us progress in our entrepreneurial journey?
Well, there are a couple of things. I don't think there's ever one thing. I think it's a combination of inner and outer.
Yeah.
The inner stuff is what we've been talking about. It's amazing to me how many entrepreneurs or wannabes don't know how to manage money. Now, in the 1980s, I had this crystal business. I was the first one to market crystals and minerals for healing and meditation nationwide. I had a line of stones called Jones Stones that was in 600 stores. And remember, this was before the internet. I was mailing out 50,000 catalogs at a time, and I was making a lot of money. I had $50,000 a month coming in today's money, and I wound up going bankrupt.
Yep.
Okay? Because I didn't know how to manage cash flow. And so many entrepreneurs don't want to take the 15 to 20 minutes a day to be in touch with their numbers. And, oh, my bookkeeper's taking care of it. That doesn't mean that your bookkeeper is going to take care of you. I had a bookkeeper 3 days a week, but he just did whatever I told him to do. And you have to understand the world of numbers if you're going to be an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
People will say to me, but I'm not very good with numbers. And I'll say, you don't have to be good with numbers. You just have to be good with data entry. And you have to learn how to read reports.
Yeah.
But if you don't do that, if you don't stay in touch with your numbers, you're going to go out of business. And people, if they have a big aloneness habit, then they're really talking about a lot. Where can I get financing? I mean, I was a debtor, so I understand that one. Oh, I need someone else's money in order to make my business work. And you can't just say it's just money management, and you can't say it's just the emotions. And, you know, there are a lot of kids today who don't have discipline. They don't know how to stick with something. And you know, this book I just came out with called The Search for Connection, which is the story about when I gave away everything I owned and went wandering for a number of years. It took me 8 years to finish that book because I had to go through all the emotional stuff of telling the story and reliving it. And I would go for a year or two and not do anything on it. But I never forgot that I had to finish that book. Mm. And to me, there are two things, ways that you can learn discipline. One is to not eat sugar. That will teach you amazing discipline. When you have to be aware of everything you're eating and say no to the foods that everybody is stuffing their face with.
Yeah.
And so that's one good way. The other way of developing discipline is to count your money on a regular basis. And the more you're willing to do that, the more discipline you will have for the other things in life.
Okay. So I'm just sort of going back to that question. And certainly I think, you know, once entrepreneurs make the money, they have to learn how to manage it. And that's an important part of sustaining their business. What about just getting to that point where they're making money to be able to actually manage? I mean, is that just the inner work that we have to do that's blocking us from actually, you know, making that potential earning that we need to survive?
No, it's the inner work and the money work where you write down everything you earn and everything you spend. Hmm. I don't care if you just do it on a little app on your smartphone and at the end of the month you add everything up. You have to teach yourself how to deal with the numbers, not when the money's coming in, but in the beginning. Before the money's coming in. So what happens is, here's what happens. People say, well, I haven't got enough money to manage. And what they're really saying is, well, I'm ashamed of what I'm earning. Mm. And that's where to start, to figure out where that shame is coming from, because it has nothing to do with the money.
Yeah.
And I find, you know, as an entrepreneur, money goes up and down and up and down.
Yeah.
And if I find that the most important time to manage my money is when I'm in a down. Mm. Because I have to I have to manage my cash flow. I have to manage who I'm going to pay when. And I have a cash flow spreadsheet that I offered to anyone who wants it, that I wanted to see everything in one sheet. So I created this Excel spreadsheet. And a friend of mine said, boy, is that ugly. And so we call it Joan's Ugly Spreadsheet. And I made a video on how to use it. And if people go to prosperityplace.com/spreadsheet, they can see this thing. And it helps me. When any time a load of money comes in, I go right to the spreadsheet and see. It tells me what I need, what's going out, what's coming in, and what's left over. And I know that by the end of the month, I have to have a certain amount left over. So this is true whether you're just starting a business or whether you've been in business. And the other thing people are missing when they go into business, they often don't have the right business skills. They just go into business. Hmm. They don't understand marketing. And here's the tough part. Whatever you're doing requires marketing. And it's like, I have an Etsy store. Well, I'm not going to sell anything unless I market it. I have books on Amazon.com. Well, they're not going to sell unless I market them. I do coaching. Well, I'm not going to get coaching clients unless I market it. And people want to do what they love to do, and they don't want to do the marketing.
Hmm. Yeah.
And if you don't do the marketing in this day and age with all the competition that's out there, you have got to be able to market. And so people will say, I don't like to market. Well, then don't go into business.
Who's going
to
see you? Yeah.
Right. And the other thing is they often don't do the market research.
Yeah.
You know, they used to selling ice to Eskimos. Now that's a good business because all the ice is melting. But you have to find out whether there's a market for what you want to do. You may have the greatest idea in the world, but if other people don't see the value of that. Are you familiar with the show Shark Tank?
Yes.
Okay, I think that's a great learning experience because all these people who have the greatest idea in the world come and they're looking for money, and the sharks look at it and go, that's not an investable idea. And it makes people be more realistic about what they're trying to accomplish. Mm. Yeah, I saw one the other day, I think it was on Shark Tank, where these people came up with an app, and they just thought it was the greatest thing in the world, and it became very clear that there wasn't a market for it.
Yeah, yeah. And I think I like those shows. I really enjoy them, actually.
Yeah, so when you ask the question, what is it that keeps them from going? It's lack of knowledge, lack of experience, lack of discipline, and lack of self-understanding. We could kind of sum it up that way.
Yeah. No, some really good points, Joan. I'm curious. I just want to ask quickly, and then I've got to jump into some questions to wrap it up. But your book that you're just releasing now, sorry, I forget the title, is that what made you give away everything? And what does that mean, giving away everything? What did it look like?
Well, first of all, I felt I didn't have an option because I had no money. I was sick. I couldn't get anyone to believe how sick I was. And I really didn't know what to do. And I started having these, what you would call spiritual experiences. And I started getting information from other dimensions, shall we put it that way?
Yeah.
And it was fascinating to me what I was learning. I had a couple of experiences that were just so far beyond anything I could understand. And so I moved into this apartment and I was out of money. I had tickets to go. This was in California. I had tickets to go back east to a cousin's bar mitzvah or something. And I had no idea what I was going to do next. So I wound up having a giveaway day and I just gave away everything I owned. I had one big crystal that I wasn't willing to give away. So I gave it to my brother and he was willing to take it for that time. I got it back eventually. But I when my father met me at the airplane, I said to him, Dad, everything I own is in this suitcase. Hmm. And there was this pregnant pause. And he said, what about the pearls? This was a set of pearls that my first husband had given me. And I said, well, I gave those to my landlady as a deposit. And another pause. And he said, well, I've always taught you that things don't matter, so I guess I can't get angry. So giving everything away was about giving. I didn't have a whole lot, but I gave whatever I had away. I had no money in the bank. I had nothing.
Yeah.
And I was in ecstasy because I was getting these messages and things were happening that were so far beyond my understanding, but it was the most interesting thing I had ever walked into.
Yeah, nice. And I think, I mean, just to sort of wrap it up there, but the liberating feeling of getting rid of the possessions that seem to own a lot of us in society these days, I think it can really help get you clear about what it's all about, I mean, this life. Because
yes,
we can become
yes.
so consumed by it all. Okay, I've got some quick questions. Do you want to add something? Sorry?
I just want to say I recently gave away everything I owned that I wouldn't take with me if I were moving.
Yep.
And it was then that my business really opened up in this whole new way.
Hmm. Yeah, and there's a lot of there's a podcast called The Minimalists out there at the moment. That's a really good one.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there's a lot of good information about it out there at the moment, and I think it's really healthy. Okay, I've got some quick questions for you. If you can try and answer them in one sentence or one word, even, that's fine. The first one is, do you have any rituals or routines that you believe contribute to your success?
I think the meditation is highly important and taking care of my money on a daily basis.
Okay. And what advice would you give your 20-year-old self?
Hang in there, honey. It's going to get better.
Cool. And what is your meaning of success?
Peace of mind. Just being satisfied and having faith in the future.
Okay. And do you have we sort of touched on that. Was there any one piece of advice you'd give someone who's wanting to make change in their life?
Don't be afraid of change and understand that it may be uncomfortable, but you'll get through it.
It will pass. And do you have a favorite food?
cashew nut butter.
Cashew nut butter. Okay, I love cashew, so I'm assuming I've never had cashew nut butter. I think it's pretty good. Do you have a favorite leisure activity?
I really like it. I love walking. We have this incredible dog park that's miles long, trails, and I go up there every day. And Santa Fe has no tall buildings. It's very much out in nature.
Yep.
So I really like walking.
Nice. And would you have a favorite book you'd like to recommend, or a book that just comes to mind that you'd suggest for the audience to read?
Right now, what I like to suggest is Childhood Disrupted, How Your Biography Affects Your Biology and How to Fix It. I think that's the end of it. And it's about how adverse childhood experiences will affect your life outcomes.
Okay. And who's that by?
Donna Jackson Nakazawa.
Donna Jackson Nakazawa.
Nakazawa.
Guys, I'll stick that in the show notes at thehiddenwhy.com so you can pick up a copy there if you wish. Plus, I'll stick your books in there too, Joan. So,
okay.
What about a favorite quote? Do you have a quote that you'd like to recommend?
I have two, one for the inner and one for the outer. The inner one is a spiritual teacher said to me one day, worrying is a waste of time.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, you know, that's a great idea. It took me 20 years to follow it, but it's great. And the other one is from Marcus Lemonis, who has this show called The Prophet on CNBC. And he says over and over again, if you don't know your numbers, you don't know your business.
Yeah. And final questions. Do we all have a why? Do we all have a why?
What is my why, you want to know?
No, do we all have a why, in your opinion?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And how does that look?
How does it look?
Well, how do we find it? How do we connect with it?
How do we find it? Okay, find out what it is you like to do and ask yourself, why do I like to do this?
Okay, and start doing it.
Yeah, right.
What does living life with passion and purpose mean?
I think it means enjoying what you're doing every moment. That's why I think it's important to be in business for yourself so that you're not doing what other people want you to do. But I've been a rebel all my life, so I've been kind of making my own way for a long time. I think you have to decide what it is you want to do and not be afraid to try what other people don't want you to do.
Yeah, pursue it. What's the worst case scenario? I like it.
Yep, yep.
Good messages, Joan. Excellent thoughts and a great conversation. I've really enjoyed it. Joan, what's the best way people can get in touch with you? Is it through your website, joansotkin.com, or Prosperity Place?
Prosperityplace.com kind of leads to everything else.
Okay, it's cool. So, guys, prosperityplace.com. I'll stick all the links in show notes. She's on Facebook, Twitter, pretty easy to reach. So, Joan, thank you for coming on.
My pleasure. It's great talking to you.
Yeah, it's been a good chat. So, guys, check it out, thehiddenwhy.com. Leave your comments and thoughts online. Reach out to Joan if you want to ask her any further questions. And until next time, peace, passion, and purpose. See you soon.
Thanks for listening to the Hidden Why podcast, where it's all about living life with passion. For all the latest news and updates, please subscribe online to thehiddenwhy.com.
There you go, guys. Another great show. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you got some value from it. I would love to hear from you, and I encourage you to jump onto thehiddenwhy.com. Subscribe to our newsletter. Subscribe to this podcast so you keep up to date with all that's happening in the Hidden Wild world. And leave me your comments and thoughts on this show or any of the other shows that you're listening to and what you're loving. If you could do me a favor too, it'd be great if you could share it with your network, with your friends, your colleagues, other people that you might think might benefit from this show or any of the other ones you're listening to. Guys, it's all about living life to the fullest and living the life that you desire here at The Hidden Why. I'd love to connect with you. Reach out to me at thehiddenwhy.com. And guys, you know what to do. You need to go out there and breathe more passion into every moment. And you need to do everything with greater purpose. And in doing so, discover your hidden why. This is The Hidden Why. My name is Lee Martinuzzi, signing out.
Thanks for listening to The Hidden Why podcast, where it's all about living life with passion. For all the latest news and updates, please subscribe online, thehiddenwhy.com. This is The Hidden Why.
Are you ready to discover your hidden why, to discover your life's purpose? Then jump onto thehiddenwhy.com and download my free discovery questionnaire. It's designed to help you connect with what's truly important in your life, and in doing so, create more freedom, fulfillment, and happiness. This is the discovery questionnaire. You can download it at thehiddenwhy.com under the resources tab. Discover your hidden why.